Welcome into 11 Personnel, presented by our friends at Monticello Bank. Nick Roush, Adam Luckett with you here in the middle of the madness, the transfer portal madness. It's going. It felt like it was really fast and furious early on, Luckett, and then it's kind of died down. But it's certainly going to be an exciting 10-day window as we look at the future of Kentucky football and college football in general. A lot of different moving parts. We also got the spring showcase we can touch on. We got the NFL draft. So, busy show. How are we feeling tonight? We ripping, we roaring. How's the eyeballs feel after staring at the screens?
Good. I think you brought up a good point. It was a little crazy. Yesterday was probably, you know, the day before is typically with the portal, the day before is almost seems more busy than day of when it opens.
It's weird. Weird how that works.
Yeah, but I think we thought you would see two-way movement, and the attrition part of the movement has to happen first for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen that play out, and then I think over the next few days into the weekend, we'll start to hear about targets. And so now we're playing a little bit of a waiting game right now, but we won't be waiting very long. But the biggest takeaway, I'd say, Nick, is that they've gone from being over their 85 scholarship threshold, which, by the way, the plan is for them to stay at the 85 whenever the settlement passes per Greg Sankey's ruling. They were going to have 85 scholarship players this year. So now they're down to where they have, like, what, by my count, they have 5 open scholarships right now that they could spend. And so now they have some room to go out and address some of the roster needs.
Yeah, and what exactly is that? You know, we'll see. I think we can speculate, but 5 is probably a little bit more wiggle room than I thought. We can get into all of it. We can start straight from the top. But first, I want to start by telling you about our friends at Monticello Bank, proud presenting sponsors of 11 Personnel. We couldn't be here without them. They've been here for you for a very long time, more than 125 years. They got 20 locations in 14 different counties across the Commonwealth. And they'll put the home court advantage right on your side. They're homegrown bank. They want you to have the home court advantage. Check out their HELOC special, home equity line of credit. So I know I've mentioned it previously, but you know, summer projects, maybe home renovations, new kitchen. We've done the kitchen. We've gone that route. It's a little stressful. It can be overwhelming. Let Monticello Bank take care of the financing part. Use the equity you have built in your home to finance those projects with great rates from Monticello Bank. Bank local. Monticello Bank, where people matter. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Monticello Bank, proud presenting sponsor of 11 Personnel. Dude, nothing's more stressful if you're gonna do the home, the kitchen reno, the cabinets. I do not recommend doing cabinets. Like, is it overall an upgrade? Yes. Is it the biggest pain in the ass you've ever done in your life? No doubt in my mind. That sucked. I showed up to a Lowe's on a 4th of July thinking, like, all right, I'll be in and out in, you know, an hour tops. Then we'll get on to, we'll go start drinking. The sale's on 4th of July. We got to get over there. No, dude, we were there way too long talking about, oh, well, this will look good here. This will look, no. The beers were just immediately deleted after that. They couldn't go down quicker, and I was playing catch up. It was like the angry drinking, the just got home from work after a long week, like smash it and crush up the can kind of drinking. So I don't recommend it, but if you are going to do it, Monticello Bank, they'll hook you up.
Yeah, that just sounds miserable. So sorry you had to go through that.
Hey, you know, it was better than the alternative, which was dealing with our old kitchen. Is this, nope, that's Jacob Polacek's show. Wrong one. Hey.
Is this thing on? Are we on the internet? Can you hear us out there?
Hello. Attrition. 7 players out so far. If you count Daniel Mincy as a scholarship player. So I think the ultimate question is, are you disappointed in any of the departures? Disappointed at all?
Yeah, I think there's a conversation to be had just about the just whole the totality of what's going on in that offensive line room. They've lost 8 players. They added in what 5?
Well,
one
4.
Of them just left.
Because the one did just leave. Yeah.
Braun, Wibberly, Wolschlager, Unama, and Pete 5. So,
but Unama just left. So,
right, right. Yeah. So just what's going on there? I think Unama, like you look at that, like that almost felt like something, you know, you just take. It's part of the collateral damage when you bring in a transfer and he can't start or he's not going to start, which Unama wasn't. Mm-hmm. I think you look at the offensive line, like they're down to, I believe, 13 scholarship players.
13 Nick? Was my count, yep.
Yeah, 13 scholarship players, I think. We know the starters left to right is going to be Shaiaz Pete, Josh Braun, Jagger Burton, Jalen Farmer, Alex Wolschlager, Malachi Woods, your swing tackle. I think Abbas Selm kind of be your swing guard. And then you've also got Wibberly, who maybe you could slide Jagger Burton to guard, let him play center if something happens. So you have some depth there, but after that, it's a lot of young guys once you get there.
Unama was the guy that was like, oh, you have great depth because this guy has experience at tackle. They're playing him at guard. That was the nice thing about him, and he had a lot of experience. But it does go back to how many guys want to hit the portal and go somewhere to not play, especially when he had done 3 years at JUCO, a year at FAU, a year at New Mexico. Is he really going to want to just be a rotational guy? He committed before they got a commitment from Shaiaz Pete. So you could understand why he might think that, oh, I've got a shot to start a tackle to like, oh, I'm an offensive guard now. I'm a second string offensive guard. I can see the frustrations. And I could understand too why there might be some concerns for Kentucky fans. Like, oh, this guy just showed up and he already left. But I will note, we were having a conversation in February about a potential logjam on the interior and who would be the odd man left out. The worry was that it would be Jagger Burton. I think it's a great sign for the overall health of the offensive line, how he's risen up, and that
yeah,
the guy who, like, no offense to Unamba, how can you be a 2-time JUCO All-American? You know, like what are you doing? Like, if you're in a JUCO All-American, you leave, right? Like, he was there. I didn't know JUCO kids could spend 3 years in JUCO, but I guess that's what he did.
Yeah, again with him, he hadn't really played much. He was kind of a tweener. You know, what was his better position? The Burton storyline is very interesting, just because like in-state kid, right? Recruitment. And they keep trying to, all right, this is the year, Jagger. This is the year. Is it finally the year, right? Or do you have to, or does something happen and you have to change things up? Because it'd be a great story, I think, of resiliency if he turns out to have a really good season. Mm-hmm. And it would be, I think, a feather in Wolford's cap from a development standpoint, too. So it'll be interesting. Like, to me, Mark Knave, Nick, is kind of the type of player that they've struggled to hit on in recruiting and then development. So, like, that is a kid, 6'6", 330 pounds, could play guard or tackle, probably a guard, fits the kind of size you want. Mm-hmm. Those are just the guys you've got to be able to keep on the roster, develop, and turn into starters. So, you know, not knowing specifically where he was in the development at this point, just knowing what he was coming out of high school, that one, I think, stung a little bit. But other than that, the departures, other than that, I think they were all kind of expected, and they were guys that had gotten passed up.
Quavo Marshall was interesting because he did the Grady Judd without the spring game, right? Like, let me get knee surgery in the summer, not play for a year. I mean, he was injured. He was redshirting, and then he left immediately. You don't know. Like, he had some good athletic tools, but that was a we'll kind of wait and see sort of deal. I wasn't shocked that the late JUCO ads last year didn't pan out for Kentucky. Those were kind of desperate ads because they needed bodies, and Denise Jackson a nose guard, and Amber Crease at tackle.
Both were They were desperate in both places.
Yes.
Offensive line, for we don't have to rehash. Defensive line, they suffered all those injuries. Mark Stoops has talked about that now multiple times. They just needed someone to play nose tackle. Mm-hmm. And they added Denius Jackson to be like their break glass in case of emergency nose tackle that could play a couple hundred snaps for them. They decided to go get an offensive guard, make him that was on the roster, and make him a nose tackle, and Austin Ramsey, who's still there, who's ahead of him, who is probably their third nose tackle on this team right now going into the year.
I admittedly wrote up the post, and I felt bad that I forgot about him because Kalen Edwards was one of those guys during the spring showcase. You're like, oh, that guy is going to be a ball player. I was hounding him as a recruit. They have a plethora of talent there, and watching Jackson move, or his lack thereof movement during one of the spring practices, it was an odd man out there. He was an odd man out. So, if we want to do – Kendrick Gilbert kind of fascinates me just from a – like, that was a very weird – you thought this guy could be good. He comes from a good program in Indianapolis Cathedral. He's a four-star talent. But, like, there's not a whole lot of production at the high school level. And you think he's got some pretty good size, but then he came to Kentucky and he was 30 pounds lighter than you expected. And it's like, well, how is he – like, what's he going to do? That he can't play that light. And so they're like, well, we got to get some weight back on him. And it just – nothing ever hit there. So I'm fascinated. What are your thoughts on him? Is this a – Miss Eval, is this just a player didn't do? Like, what's your take on it? Because I really don't think that they're missing anything here. But, like, that goes back to kind of, not necessarily Mark Knave, but Tavian Gadsden at least seems like he's hitting and moving in the right direction. Like, how is this guy that much further along than somebody who seemingly had a bright future in Kendrick Gilbert? Because that was kind of a late, big recruiting win that was tightly contested.
Okay, a couple things. On Quavo Marshall, Dryon Nichols happened, and Andrew Purcell's coming.
Yeah.
Like, no one has really talked about this Andrew Purcell kid, but, like, this guy is going to be hard to keep off the field.
Good.
So that's coming this summer. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if he'll play a lot this year, but that guy is a player. At cornerback specifically. So for Marshall, he just was logjam. Enter the portal makes sense for him. As far as the Kendrick Gilbert thing last year, one of the weirdest things of the season, Nick, was just kind of the heading into week. It was almost eerily similar to what they did with David Wohlleball. Like, it's all right. It was like, this guy's playing for us. We're excited about him. Talks to the media. It doesn't go well. But with Gilbert, it was like, he's going to be a guy we can plug in. And you just never really played him. I think the weight thing was interesting. From our standpoint, from our knowledge, he would play at a 270 plus in high school.
Yeah, which I don't. Was it just bad weight? Like, I don't. I didn't have any trouble keeping weight on in college like it. I don't know how these guys, college football player would have that much trouble either.
So basically, I don't have all the information. We don't have all the information, but it seems like, all right, this guy's not keeping weight on at that size. Is he really into this?
Yeah. Is there a want to there?
Yeah, that's what I wonder. Yeah. You know, then you go back to his high school profile. He was bigger, stronger, could move, but he didn't necessarily dominate.
Yeah.
So then that kind of, when you put those two things together, that kind of makes some sense. And so was he just into it? I think that is a fair thing to worry, really, because he checked all the tools and checked a lot of trait boxes that you would want checked as a prospect. You know, I was a fan of him coming out. I thought he was, you know, a good take. Like, Iowa was in on this guy. LSU was in on him. Purdue landed him, and Purdue's defensive line coach, I believe Mark Hagan, is now at Louisville. He's known as being one of the better defensive line coaches and developers in the sport, so he wanted him. Like, it all made sense. But even you go back to his recruitment was weird with Kentucky. I'm still not sure who recruited, like, who was his lead recruiter for Kentucky, right? Like, that was just the whole how he got here was interesting. So just, I think, numbers wise, right? So, I think they wanted him to play nose.
Yeah.
Well, he couldn't hold the weight.
That's an issue.
So, I would assume they tried, I think they probably tried him at some other positions this spring. And he was behind probably a lot of players, and so I think it's just best for both parties that he just kind of go in a different direction. But now that puts another issue or a thing together. It's like that 2023 class now. We talked about the 2022, how that class has kind of gone belly up. Now you look at the 2023 class, and they got like six or seven guys left. You got, you know, Grant Godfrey. You've got Jamarian Wilcox, Tavian Gadsden, who you mentioned. Austin Ramsey, we talked about earlier, Ty Bryant, Malachi Wood, Nasir Addison. I believe that's it. That's all that's left on the roster. And a lot of these guys didn't go. Like, Kamari Anderson transferred to Arizona State, but all these other guys were at like G5 or FCS. And then Kobe Keenum's at Mississippi State. So this wasn't a great class, and this was one of those classes, Nick, that got off to a slow start. And it took them a while to gain some momentum.
Mm-hmm. Ipso facto, don't let that happen with this class.
Well, I think it's already happened. So I don't think there's much you can do about that at this point in the calendar.
You know, it's not Derby yet. I mean, when it is, you won't find me reporting on any football recruiting. But to get back to the genesis of the portal, seven guys total out the door. So you've got room to add. Stoops wasn't specific with players, positions. If I've got your top priority in the portal, like it, what should it be? If you get to play Mark Stoops roster builder, who's the position? Who's the type of guy you're saying, we got these nil bucks around, let's make sure we get one at this. The other ones, probably luxuries, but we got to have this.
Here's the thing with this spring portal. Like, if you're shopping for starters, brother, good luck. Now, if you need to add some depth pieces, I think there is some quality candidates out there. I mean, I look at running back. I look at Josh McCray, running back Illinois, 235, 240-pound tailback from Alabama. Like, he would make some sense, but I don't know if what Kentucky's situation would necessarily be appealing to him. Then I think it's really important that they add a safety. Like, I think they have to come out of this with a safety. They just don't have the bodies. Like, I mean, they just need more numbers in that room. I think it's really important that they come away with this with a safety. I think a running back needs to be addressed in some form or fashion, and then watching what happens at receiver. You know, there's the Hardly Gilmore scuttlebutt out there. There is the True Edwards situation that they're trying to get through.
Yep.
How do they feel just in general about that? It's hard. Spring was very, they kept that very private, what was going on.
Yeah, and then the receivers get hurt, so that's even a bigger.
Yeah, how hurt are these guys precisely? Right. But to me, one that really stands out to me is safety. They just gotta have another safety. I think in this room,
there's not enough. Point blank.
And running back, they don't have enough bodies either. They only got four scholarship tailbacks, and Tavani Mizell was not. I wasn't at the open practice, but he wasn't dressed for the spring game. He didn't practice until halfway through the season last year.
Yeah.
So, like, just where is he at? And so you only have three scholarship tailbacks. Like, that's another position that you probably really need to address.
Yeah. Running back and safety are the top two, in my opinion. I know you floated out tight end, too, because they'll only have four once Mikel Skinner arrives on campus. And that's a true freshman who can't really play in line right away. Like, he's going to have to put on a lot of weight to be able to do that in the SEC. So, I know Tanner Kazoil, the Ball State guy, he transferred to Wisconsin and is already like, I'm out. That was a guy that they were kind of in on for a little bit. But he was such a big fish. I didn't realize he ultimately ended up at Wisconsin, but I knew there was a lot of big players in there. I don't think Kentucky ever got him on a visit, but they certainly were in the mix early on in the process. I think he's going somewhere to be tight end one, but it does feel like they're going to go out if given the opportunity and fish for one of those, especially when you've got five potential open spots. I'm sure, you know, they wouldn't mind giving a walk on an extra scholarship or something like that. But, you know, five is a lot of number. But like you said, like how many quality players and how much do you want to not overpay for them too? Because I think a big lesson that we learned last year, particularly from LSU, that was a huge talking point from Brian Kelly, was the overpaying for guys in the spring portal at certain positions who you want to just be rotational guys, but are end up getting top dollar just because there was nobody left. Who was the guy that LSU ended up getting?
JVR Suggs, who has since transferred to Wisconsin. Your Grand Valley State.
Yeah.
Defensive line transfer.
And was just like, so-so for LSU. Not a ton of production there. But that's something you have to keep an eye on, too, the longer this portal kind of gets rung out. It's only day one. There's 10 more days of being open. But that will certainly become a factor at some position. Which exact one is it? I don't know. It does make me happy that they did get Shiaz Pete at the 11th hour. Because if Kentucky would have gone into this looking for a tackle, hold your nose and pray.
Yeah, you just got to know what this batch is. It's good for addressing depth. So I think for Kentucky, that's what they're going to address. Finding starters here, it's much, much more difficult than it is in the winter portal. It's kind of just my overall sentiment on that.
Yeah, it's going to be lighter, but big picture, like it, we've got some big names that have gone in, and we haven't gotten the chance to watch the Nico saga unfold. And man, it really has been a content well for our bosses at On3 because the bitch Nakos, who was right. There's that aspect of it. There's Heupel getting taking a huge victory lap for it. Loved Urban Meyer coming in today and giving his two cents and dunking on Tennessee. We needed that. We needed somebody, even if it is smug old Urban Meyer, we needed somebody to come in from the top rope and talk a little smack at Tennessee, which he makes a great point. Like, yes, that was a big win from the team, but like, when they're getting their ass kicked, how much are they going to be saying, I'm glad Heupel stuck it to Nico. Like, I'm glad he made that move.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's judge this on November 5th, right?
Yeah. Because
then if it's a train wreck in November 5th, that's not – the storyline is going to be, why was Tennessee being cheap?
Yeah. It's going to be the other way around because
– But, yeah. But
right
yes.
now,
but
it's
– It was a PR move, yes, for them in the moment, yes.
And we can laugh at Nico's stats and, like, cautionary tale. I mean, look at the market value. You're seeing what his market value goes down. I know there was somebody who said, kudos to somebody for voluntarily taking a pay cut to see what his market value is. Because, A, not only do you have to think about just the amount of money that teams are willing to pay after all of this mess, I love that somebody pointed out the cost of living. $2.2 million in Knoxville, its spending power in L.A. is 3.8. That's what you would need to have the same standard of living. And right now, that's the even funnier part about all of this. Like, we've got Colin Cowherd reporting. Colin Cowherd saying he's going to UCLA. The Athletic's reporting it. But then Chris Lowe saying, well, they're still negotiating because – I mean, Nico's dad seems like such a bad actor in all of this that UCLA is not willing to say that anything's a done deal until it's a done deal and his ass is on campus. So I think if there's one huge lesson in all of this, it's be wary of parental representation, there are very few success stories. LeVar Ball, for as much guff as he got, he's like the opposite of what Yama Olave's dad is. Like, and I believe he's a Nico too, correct? Like, he's Big Nico or something like that?
Big Nick, yeah.
Big Nick. He is getting his kids less money and being a jerk about it and also not being as public, although some of those quotes are hilarious. But LeVar at least got his kids paid, you know?
Pre-NIL too. Different right. time.
Yeah, but like they're doing well for themselves. Lamar Jackson, as dumb as I thought it was that he had his mom be his agent, like he ended up dancing around it and getting his deal that he needed with the Ravens.
Also, but, different situation. He had won an MVP.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is they just didn't have any leverage to this.
No.
That was the whole part of this negotiation. That's why I can't believe in why they made a big mistake, I think, by not having representation to just kind of guide them through this. Because they went to the playoff, yes, but he wasn't the reason they went to the playoff. He just didn't have the numbers. And so where they made up the mistake was, you know, they signed that big deal, the $8 million deal, but like if you would have done a year-by-year thing, you might have been able to get a little more. You might have made a little bit more. You might have been in between the two and the four.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they kind of messed up. And so they tried to play hardball, and Tennessee called their bluff, I think, thinking that they won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
But then they were willing to play this transfer card right now. And so at that point, both sides had to make a decision, and I think they both decided that the other wasn't going to give them what they wanted, so they decided to separate.
And is bad, like right now we're in the kind of point and laugh at Nico phase, but especially when Tulane has dropped out of the race, when John Sumrall,
that just seemed like optics. So like that would seem like a great move for Tulane just to get their name on a graphic.
Oh, it was great. It was like, you know what? We're good. We're willing to deal with a guy who can steal a car, but this Nico, we're good. That was very funny. Somebody in the chat asked, who was the quarterback that went from Ohio State and then Miami? Tate Martell. Oh, Tathan Martell, who I think ended up UNLV playing tight end or something like that. That guy.
Yeah, he was at UNLV. He was at another school for a little bit. I can't remember, but yeah, he was all over the place.
Well, more cautionary tales. Unamba portaling in and then portaling out made me look up what happened to Raymond Cottrell. He was the guy who committed to, I think, Georgia, Florida, before ended up at Texas A&M. And then after a year, he transfers to Kentucky. Is only in the portal once, or is only there for spring practice. And, like, watching him at spring practice, my first thought was, is he a tight end? I mean, he was slow. I did not understand the recruiting ranking, but he, I guess, thought he was better. I don't know who told who to go, but nevertheless, he ends up at Division II West Georgia, played three games, had three catches for 23 yards. I mean, that guy is going to flame out so fast, and that is, I think Rusty had the stat. You know, they could have filled up 7 football teams by the first 6 hours in the portal. Got up to like 700 players. I mean, a lot of these guys just aren't going to end up playing anywhere. So,
yeah,
I do think that we need to remind folks about the cautionary tale that is jumping into the portal without anywhere to go. There's also, you know what they could do if they find themselves on hard times, though, Mr. Luckett?
Call Andy.
Andy Luecke, my perfect franchise. You know, You might have to give up your NIL, but you can start your own NIL. You can work your way up through your own business ownership. He'll help you find your perfect franchise at myperfectfranchise.net. You can diversify your portfolio, build wealth, leave a legacy for your family. If you've already got a job, you can make this franchise part of your side hustle, or you could just be out of a roster spot in college football because you jumped in the transfer portal too quickly. Andy Ludicky, he's here to help no matter what the case may be. He is a franchise consultant, so he's going to talk with you, get to know you better to help find out what you like, what you could be interested, help find your passion, one that you can pursue with franchising opportunities. His services are 100% free. He's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. So head on over to MyPerfectFranchise.net. You can learn more, too, by calling Andy at 404-973-9901 or email him to set up a meeting, Andy at MyPerfectFranchise.net. I wanted to hit on a few more big things before we get to the showcase. How did Jaden Ott sign with Oklahoma before the portal even opened? Is he a grad transfer? What the hell was going on there?
I mean, he goes to Cal, so he's got to be smart, hit the books. So, yeah, that would be my guess. That was first big move by Jim Nagy, was that.
The first thing I thought of was the OTTOGO, Ought to Go, parody song the Calgarithm made this year. That was great. You know what? I want to pull the stats up because the Cal Golden Bears, they don't have a lot of players. Nine of their top rushers from the last year all entered the portal. Four of their five players to throw a pass. 11 of 19 that caught a pass. 10 of 13 players with a carry. Two of their four tight ends. And four of their five projected offensive line starters. Oh, excuse me. Four of their five incoming will be transfers in. To say that Cal has had some turnover would be an understatement. I also just, specifically on Ott, that's back-to-back years where top rusher from a former Pac-12 defector could be the highest-paid guy at his place and decides to go elsewhere to a big-name program. Last year was Damian Martinez to Miami. This year, Ott to Oklahoma.
Justin Wilcox, like 4 days ago, was on the ACC Network talking about how excited they were that Ott was back and how big of a year that he was going to have for them. I mean, that's an impossible job. Put it bluntly. Cal's just an impossible job. Wilcox, I actually think, has done a good job there considering everything he's kind of had to deal with. Just impossible job. Similar to what kind of happened to Washington State this year, Nick. Washington State's obviously in a worse situation, not being in a conference essentially in football. And Kentucky kind of benefited from that, right? Getting David Gusta, but he wasn't. They had like 30-something players leave. John Mateer, their quarterback, is going to be at Oklahoma with Ott. So, the guys who should have been in the Pacific Northwest, the kind of like the Pac-12 was still a thing, Ott and Mateer would be looked at as two of the best players in the conference returning to their positions. And instead, they'll be playing on the same Oklahoma team.
Have you been able to keep your pulse on what they've done with their offensive line? Because, I mean, if they just have that fixed, like Venables went out and he's acted like a coach who has to have a great year to keep his job, even though his dumbass bosses gave him an extension before the start of the year. Because you go out and you get this big flashy GM hire who helps you bring in a new offensive coordinator who brings his quarterback. I know Andy and Ari were talking about, like, who's to say that Mateer couldn't be at the Heisman ceremony at the end of the year. Like that's the kind of heavy lifting, big cojones kind of moves that they've made this off season with their offense.
Well, their top two signees out of high school were tackles. And Michael Fasusi was a top 10 recruit. Like he's playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Jaden Proctor type signee.
He's probably going to fix one of those spots. And then, I know they got Derek Simmons, who Kentucky was in on, the Western Carolina tackle transfer.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So he'll fill a spot, and they've got a couple other offensive linemen. But getting a guy like Fasusi, if he hits right away, that's kind of how you fix that, is by getting these young high school guys in the lineup fast that can play, and you've got them in there for a couple years, and you build around them. And so, they're going to be they seem like a popular dark horse team for a lot of people. And they're going to this kind of air raid offense, and that structure of offense has been known to be really helpful on an offensive line.
And it scratches that nostalgic itch, too, at Oklahoma. Right. Bringing back old Bob. Their schedule, you know, and I – but just remembering the – I'm sure the inverse can't be that much worse, but I remember it feeling kind of friendly. And now you're going to Knoxville when they don't have their quarterback and they're going to be – I mean, you want to talk about a dramatic change. We'll definitely get into it more heavily once we get into summer radio, but the outlook on Tennessee is drastically different, which I feel like a squirrel, but I thought of SEC big picture to whole. Like, how excited were you to hear SEC Media Days that Kentucky's Mark Stoops will speak on Thursday?
Yeah, not my favorite. Hopefully they. Hopefully he's not. Wasn't he last year? He wasn't. Yeah. He not only on Thursday, he was the last guy to go.
I mean, it was
which for us is inconvenient.
I mean, it's for me. It's less about the like. In theory, you actually get more content out of it because then your big day is on Thursday when you normally wouldn't have much of anything. But just being last, like hell, I bet we asked five questions in the ballroom because nobody was there. You know, you just it sucks when. It's this big SEC convention, and it feels like your team is totally irrelevant. And that
like you're not even part of it.
Yeah, that's what it's going to feel like, and that's a bummer. Like, hell, even last year we didn't even get to enjoy the Deion Walker pop or whatever it was. Which, who the hell are they going to bring to this thing?
That's a great question. Ty Bryant seems like a
they like bringing him out.
Seems like a candidate. Jamori Macklin seems like a candidate. Those are two guys they brought out a lot for media this spring.
If Jagger pops,
yeah,
he's a Lexington guy. I reward him, but that is not the sexiest group of, you know.
No, I mean even last year they, you know, you had Deion, who was one of the better players in the league, entering the year. But yeah, this year, yeah, it's gonna be interesting. Can we go? Can we get a Monday? Taste what Monday feels like at SEC Media Days.
Hey, this is a good question that Walker has in the chat. Walker, y'all, because we brought up Jim Nagy. Walker's query was just like, hey, why doesn't Stoops hire a GM? I guess this gives us an opportunity to explain the setup, but also like, there's a good question.
If you got him on Truth Serum, he would say he has one.
Yeah. But is it Eddie or is it Chase Heike? Eddie Grant or Chase Heike? Who does
it's
more
Eddie.
GMing?
It's Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
From a dot. Now.
Because that's what's weird is Eddie is like the financial guy, but Heike is the, I'm picking the players guy. Right? Like, that's kind of our general understanding of it.
It's he's like, the more... He's more heading the scouting arm of it.
Like Eddie's saying, hey, we need to get three of this position, and then they go to Chase and they say, who's your top three at this position? And then what can we get?
From my understanding of it, now, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to say another thing to kind of like what I think defining what a GM is really important in all of these discussions. Every GM is kind of have a different role depending on their organization.
Andrew Luck got to fire their coach. Without cause and pay him a buyout. Like, no, Jim Nagy is not hiring or firing Brent Venables.
Yeah, Jim Nagy is not, like, I think he's, like, if they were to fire Venables, I think they'd have it written where Nagy would still be there. Mm-hmm. But he's not, I don't think he's determining if Brent Venables get fired or not. Like, Andrew Luck can kind of, he is the head of football. He's essentially an executive AD.
Yes, which is, acting as a traditional NFL general manager.
So all of these kind of organizations that have GMs, all of them are different. So I think I think fans just in general and even media are just kind of assuming that they all do the same thing when they really don't. Like, it just depends on your organization. Kentucky has a scouting setup. Chase Heike's worked through the building. He's gone from GA to kind of the head. He's their player personnel director to me. Yep. Like, he heads their scouting organization and a lot of their recruiting stuff. Where Eddie Grand, to my knowledge and from what we've heard, he's like he's assigning the dollar values, I think, to the players.
Yes.
And he's has a heavy hand in, we have $18 in the pot.
Yes.
We have $18 to spend on six players.
Correct.
So that's more of kind of what he does. And at the end of it all, it doesn't matter unless the coach is going to listen to him.
Exactly. And that's the other
thing. And Eddie's the person that Stoops trusts. So that's the setup they have. Now, whether you like it or not, it's another conversation. But that is how I understand it. That's kind of how it's set up. That they have a whole scouting recruiting department that goes in the players, creates big boards, and kind of shows the coaches this is who's available. This is what can do what. These guys match your, if you know, check these boxes for you, whether they're size, weight, specifically good at a certain thing as positional dependent. And then I think from there it goes into the dollar value part. I think that's where Eddie Grant has a big role.
The biggest thing, too, in all of this is Stoops is the longest tenured coach in the SEC. He's pretty well paid. They aren't going to pay somebody a bunch of money to do a job that a lot of folks think he should just be doing. You know, like, I'm sure within the athletic department, right? Now,
yeah.
Part of, I think, the bickering was making sure that he had enough support staffers to do all of the GMing sort of roles, right? Like, to do all the, to have enough support staff. But at the end of the day, Mark Stoops is the head coach. And that ain't, they ain't reshuffling that deck.
Yeah, I mean, that's something interesting. Like, when Stoops moves on, like, and if Barnhart's still overseeing everything, is that something he would like to change?
Where he can kind of pass off some of it and essentially, like you said, have the, what'd you call it, executive AD for the sport, associate AD for the sport?
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what Andrew Luck is. But, like, yeah. I just want it known that every general manager is different. And just because that title doesn't mean any specific thing per se.
Not like it does in the NFL, which, speaking of the NFL, the draft, we're just over a week away, and I'm sure all of the draft picks are going to be rocking Roback, because Roback, it's the most comfortable gear. It's the best looking gear out there on the planet. ROBACK.com, promo code KSR gets you 20% off your first purchase at Roback.com. Whether you're want a new Q-Zip, spring has sprung, or maybe a golf shirt. You got to watch the Masters last weekend. You got that itch. You're going to be on the links. Go to Roback.com. The patterns are awesome. The shirts, they fit great. The collars are outstanding. The shorts are wonderful. Roback's got everything you need to make sure you're ready to look stylish and feel great this summer. Roback.com, promo code KSR for 20% off your first purchase. I think they'll need a Q-Zip to go under the jacket coat. It's going to be a little chilly in Green Bay next week, where Maxwell Harrison, he's actually going to be in the house for the NFL draft, Mr. Luckett. It's got to make you feel good about where he stands in the pecking order.
Yeah. The NFL wants to avoid, like, the Will Levis situation.
Yep.
So if you're getting an invite, they expect you to be a first-round pick. And so Harrison, like, it's looking like he's going to be the first cornerback ever out of Kentucky to be selected in the first round. And for the program, that's going to be a really good development story. Three-star recruit, like a mid three-star recruit, didn't play for 2 years.
Yeah.
Then became a starter, was all SEC a couple times, and then even missed games and was still a first-round pick.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a good kind of, I think, recruiting pitch for them to sell. Once it happens, because they talked about recruiting them. That's what they need. That's model. What they want to point out. Yeah, that's the model. Like, similar to Jamin Davis, how we heard a lot about for a couple of years, you heard a lot about Jamin Davis, how that's what they sold. That Harrison will be, he's the next one.
Exactly. And things are looking good in that department. I think Deion Walker's department's a lot fuzzier. We had the Beast come out and look at, I didn't like all the fancy graphics. It was too fancy for me. I just need the old school PDF.
Yeah, I just got the PDF, yeah. That's the one. Yeah. I didn't even mess with the interactive. Yeah.
They got a little fancy. The New York Times got fancy on us. And Brugler evaluated Walker as that third, fourth round fringe. I tend to kind of, I've noticed some late sort of PR stuff where I believe it was the Bills who hosted him and the agents made sure to point out, like, yeah, They discovered a stress fracture in his back that he played with last season, so that explains some of the lack of production. And ultimately, I agree with your take that people aren't going to let a guy that big who has production slip by them, especially late in the third round. So we could have ourselves a nice, every day, a little bit of Kentucky flavor in the NFL draft. Could be nice.
I think we're going to be going late at Thursday and Friday. I think Maxwell Harrison is going to be one of the last picks of the first round, and then I think you can see Walker. We're going to be on watch for him at the end of that third round.
Which, what's that going to mean for us, Luckett? Like, because our plan is that 11 personnel, next week's episode is just us live talking about the NFL draft as it's happening. So are we going to start at the first pick? Are we going to, I mean, I guess we have to, right?
Yeah, that, we'll just.
We're going to start with Cam Ward?
We're just going to go until Hairston goes off the board. And then we'll wrap it up when he gets picked, give initial thoughts, and then we'll work.
Man, we might be talking about some weird stuff stream.
We're going to get, this is going to be a fun stream because the Shedeur Sanders angle has got a chance to be, that it has a chance to be an absolute roller coaster.
That's true.
What happened? So we'll get to take it all in.
I'm looking forward to it, but also I'm also yawning thinking about it. So there's that aspect of it. But nevertheless, should have some great takes bacon your way, and along with them, Jamon Dumas Johnson, Eli Cox are potential draft guys on Saturday, that third round, fourth through seventh.
Yeah,
on day three, where things get a little, that broadcast gets a little crazy. It can be fun. Things are happening fast.
I kind of like that because there's no real fluff at that point.
Yeah.
It's just Kuiper and Lou Riddick talking ball for like 7 hours in a row.
Then they start arguing over trivial stuff. It's fun.
Yeah, it's the best.
Good clean.
That's actually probably my favorite. They get a little more intense, I would say. Where first round is more just they got a lot of time to waste. Where second, third, and then you get into day three, they're going. I'm trying to get the coverage out. And just going back and forth on whatever the storylines are in the NFL.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. I'll be able to fire off some Derby takes then, maybe too. Maybe that's how I'll fill time. I'll just talk about horses.
You can give horse comps for these players. Ashton Jeanty, Seattle Slough.
I mean. The
Jackson Dart, mind that bird. If he goes off in the top 10,
I like the Jeanty too. It's like he stands straight up out of his stance. Well, you know, slow starter, but he closes hard. Sandman, especially if that pace breaks down, he's gonna be hard to catch. But yeah, we'll have a lot to talk about then. Spring showcase, we did a rapid reaction on it. I don't really have much more to add because we didn't get a whole lot from that experience.
There wasn't much to unpack, I would say.
What you missed when you didn't go, it wasn't much.
A lot of players were out. Starters weren't in the game very long.
We got what, three or four Calzada drives?
There was no tackling.
Yeah.
To the ground. I don't even know if Kendrick
Law happened earlier.
Did Kendrick Law have a target?
Yeah, he caught that one pass from Bowley that Gerard Smith would have killed him.
You're right. They had scrimmages in spring. They had two of them. We just didn't see any of them when they were tackling to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was unfortunate, but not a whole lot to take away from there. By the time we talk next week, Luckett, will there be a new Kentucky football commitment from the transfer portal?
I'd say yes.
Okay. You heard it here first.
I think they'll have one by then, but we'll see. Yeah, you never know. We'll see how. I'm trying to remember how fast some of those moved last year. I think they moved pretty fast. Like, I think I remember Waller happening really fast.
Yeah, that was a little different too because there was the pre-established relationship, high school recruiting and stuff. Because I think he committed and then visited after committing.
I think he entered the portal and then he was on campus 3 days later and he like committed 5 days later.
Okay. And players, can they visit this weekend? Is it live for that?
I need to check the recruiting calendar, but I believe so.
I would think it is. We'll see. We'll see. We got plenty of.
Yeah, it has to be because like Nebraska's having a spring game. They wouldn't have a. Not having a spring game. Some other teams are having a spring
Colorado
game this week.
Retiring.
Yeah, I don't think they would have a spring. I don't think they'd be having a spring game if they couldn't host recruits. But yeah.
Well, hopefully.
Can you? That's another conversation.
Dude, I get so mad about it because it's one thing to be to jump the gun on like having too many jerseys retired. You know, we like to talk about North Carolina in that regard. There's no trend I hate more in sports than immediately retiring somebody's jersey. I don't even care if he just won the Heisman. Why do you need a jersey retirement pop for a freaking spring game? Just let the cake bake, man. Just let the cake bake.
It goes well. It's up in that draft type. This is just what when you hire Deion. This is just what it is, right? Like,
but it's not him alone though. Like this is Terrence Shannon got his and it hung upside down, and he was a good player. But is he come back a year after and get your jersey retired? No.
Yeah, I mean North Carolina. If you start, they retire your jersey in basketball. They've got like 80 of them.
The one that I didn't mind was Caitlin Clark because, I mean, she was women's college basketball for a couple of years, and she also broke the scoring record. Having Caitlin Clark day the year after, fine. It's also for a big game. You know, they're going to sell that place out. You got to let the cake bake on some of these because some of them look bad in hindsight. They can look really bad in hindsight. Cordell Stewart doesn't even have his jersey retired.
I mean, there's a couple other players too that were like multi-time All-Americans, Colorado, that do not have their jerseys retired.
It's the prime effect. It's the prime effect. I'm shocked he's still going to be coaching there after his son's gone. So they're an interesting team. Expectations. But we can talk more about them later. We'll have plenty to talk about next week during our draft show. So I know they've got all these different broadcasts. You can watch it on three different networks. Just hang out with us. Pop on the YouTubes. Enjoy it. We'll have plenty of intel and updates on the transfer portal over the next few weeks on KSR Plus. If you aren't on there, join us now. UK1 will get you 2 months for $1. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us tonight. Shout out Stephen Peake. He's going out celebrating his birthday. Had fun watching him rip up IU. If you haven't seen that video, watch it on the YouTube channel. But for more, we'll be back with plenty more next week. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush.